He's right in front of me, and I can honestly tell him that I'm going to knock him spark out. Leaping right hand by the Prince. Ooh. And a hard left. And Kelly's down for the third time.
Whoa! He's for real. The
unbelievable.
For real.
One more punch. And Carter has gone. Bernard Dunn is the champion of the world. Bernard Dunn is the champion of the world. Fantastic, Bernard. Fantastic.
And here comes
Welcome to Off the Brawl on Off the Ball, the show which will bring you all the headline news and views from around the world of combat sports. Our own Niall McGrath will be along later to recap the weekend that was in mixed martial arts as Tyron Woodley slowed Darren Till's role at UFC 228. But we'll start with boxing, and as the new season really starts to take shape, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by former middleweight champion of the world, Andy Lee, and my fellow boxing aficionado in the Off the Ball office, Phil Egan. Lads, how's it going?
Good, yeah. I knew you had a hand in the intro because when I heard Nassim Hamed in there, I was like, yeah, Ronan made this.
I'm a fanboy. Yeah, so we actually have loads to get into here in the first show. We'll obviously look back at Saturday's welterweight action as Amir Khan and Sean Porter racked up two very different wins on either side of the Atlantic. We'll also take a more in-depth look at what many reckon to be the fight of 2018. So that's Gennady Golovkin versus Canelo Alvarez 2. First off though, lads, it's probably worth just taking stock of where boxing got at the moment, because it's not that long ago that people were sort of writing the obituary for boxing as a mainstream sport, but it feels as healthy now as it ever has.
Yeah, I think the UFC certainly has given boxing a bit of a kick up the backside, that now matchmakers are putting the best against the best, and you can't avoid the best fighters, or you can't protect records as much as you used to. And look, all the best fighters do tend to have defeats on the records. I mean, I know Golovkin hasn't been beaten yet. He's got a draw now, but Canelo has been beaten. So I think once these fighters lose, then they realise, you know, the O is gone. Let's go for it. Let's take risks. And we're being treated to some great fights. And just even looking at some of the fights that are coming up between now and the end of the year, it's good times for boxing.
Yeah, Andy, and typically, America would have been the powerhouse of boxing, and it was kind of, fighters were almost obligated from this part of the world to go over there and to make a lucrative career. But UK seemed to see as the initiative there a couple of years ago, albeit with Eddie Hearn, maybe Anthony Joshua, a little bit of that, and there's kind of a trickle-down effect there.
Yeah, there's a huge boxing boom in the UK, but it's definitely, maybe for the last 10 years, it's a global sport. Mm. You know, traditionally, the networks in America wouldn't really accept, you know, the fans couldn't get behind names that ended with, you know, Golovkin or, you know, Kovalev. You know, they didn't identify with them, the average man on the street. But now there seems to be, you know, with globalization anyway, in the broader sense, it's definitely a global sport because you have fighters from all over the world. And the thing is, once you're good enough in the ring, it doesn't really matter what your backstory is. You know, that's it. And Golovkin's really the catalyst of that. You know, he's brought over, was it, like 2008 or so, when he made his US debut, he fought Proska, got an opportunity with the network and with HBO, and they haven't looked back. And since he's become more and more of a power player in boxing, so have the other Eastern European fighters, you know.
Yeah.
But just with this boxing, maybe it's because of the UFC, it's a kick on effect of that. But the powers that be in sport, like the people who put on TV show, the TV networks and the pay-per-view networks, they're demanding these fighters fight each other because, there's so much competition now for people's time and people's, you know, on a Saturday night. Are you going to stay in and watch the fight? Are you going to pay to watch a fight, you know, more than you're already paying for the subscription? So it has to be worth people's, it has to be worth a while. It'll be interesting to see how things go just in a broader sense because, you know, all of the major promoters now have deals with different networks. Yeah. And, you know, Eddie Hearn has signed this $1 billion deal with DAZN.
DAZN, yeah.
Yeah, you can pronounce that. I was going to call it DANZ. And Top Rank have ESPN2.
Yeah.
Golden Boy still seemed to be with HBO.
Yeah.
And also HBO work with most, but also PBC, Al Heyman seems to have a new lease of life, and they're talking about they've got a new $60 million a year investment in their program. So it'll be interesting to see, and it might put another wedge in that these fighters, say like there's likes of Terence Crawford and Errol Spence, they won't fight because they're with different promoters and different networks. But we'll see that, like, for special fights, they do cross platforms, like the likes of Mayweather and Pacquiao. They did. That was both shown on HBO and Showtime. So, yeah. But not every fight is going to be of that magnitude. But we'll wait and see. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. But that boxing is definitely
in the and I think social media has played a big part as well, because now a boxer can call out another boxer on social media. And if you don't respond, you know, people think you're a bit of a chicken shit, like, you know. So you have to, first of all, you have to respond. And then if you don't take the challenge on, people are like, you're ducking fights. Whereas years ago, you could say, oh no, I wanted that fight, we just couldn't agree terms, whereas it's so much more transparent now.
Yeah, and like, obviously the Irish boxing scene, much publicised stuff out of the ring, but in the ring, we've got three world champions and hopefully add two more before the end of the year. We've got James Tennyson takes on Tevin Farmer, and we've obviously got Carl Frampton looking to win a fourth belt when he takes on Josh Warrington. That's not yet confirmed. But it's interesting that you touched on, off-air, we were talking with Jason Quigley, and just the idea that he's in America, trying to build his base there. Michael Conlon's kind of back and forth. And we've got the likes of Carl Frampton obviously built his home in Belfast and basically stayed there. So if you were starting out again, do you think you'd still go to America to learn your trade, or do you think there's opportunities here?
When I turned pro, well, it was 2006, you had to go to America. Like, if you had serious intentions, you could have stayed in England, but it wasn't like it is now. I think if you're... It depends who your promoter is, and like if you're signed with Eddie Hearn, then you're better off being based in England. I don't think it's as strong as the gyms aren't as strong as they used to be in America. And I don't think the scene is as strong as it used to be there. It would be a tough one, but I think for the two boxers who you mentioned, Michael Conlon, I think going to Adam Booth is a perfect fit for him, and it won't inhibit him from fighting in America because he has the top rank promotional deal. And the same with Jason Quigley, you know, it's about finding the right fit. And me and the Cronky, it just worked, you know. I kind of love that environment, that kind of a jungle of a gym. But those guys need more. Those guys were very seasoned amateurs, and they just need refining and adjusting to the professional game. And they're going to get that in with Dominic Ingle and Adam Booth, yeah.
And you were obviously a top prospect on HBO and getting good publicity over there, but you made a point of coming back and fighting at home a good bit.
Well, I think it's important to keep in touch with your home base. Yeah. And Emmanuel was really influential in me fighting in Ireland. You know, him and Brian Peters really, Brian put on the shows, but Emmanuel was really forced me and was a force in getting me on those shows. And he believes strongly in fighting in your hometown. It'd be great to see some of these guys come back and fight here now. We all know and understand what the climate of boxing is in Ireland, but I believe if there was a big enough fight, you know, people would come out and watch it.
Yeah, because like the likes of when John O'Carroll fought Declan Garrity, that had to be taken to Belfast. It's a shame because it's an all Dublin affair, and that would have been... You just don't want these fights existing in a vacuum. You know, the Belfast fans were into it while it was on, but in Dublin that's a significant fight for... You know, two different sets of fans, you know. But the lads, you were just chatting about the schedule that's coming up. Like, I just jotted down a couple, obviously leaving out a couple here, but we've got Canelo Golovkin at the weekend, Joshua Pavekin next weekend, Grove Smith the weekend after that. You know, we've got Saunders Andrade, which is in your old division, Andy, so that's a good technical fight there. Derevchenko and Jacobs also at the middleweight division. Ryan Burnett against Nito Denaire, like two huge names at that division. And then a couple not confirmed yet. We've got Wilder against Fury on the cards, Frampton Warrington, Usyk Bellew. They're all being mooted, and that's only half of them. So which of those are you most excited about? Which one's really getting the pulses racing there?
I always associate December with really great fights.
Yeah.
And I know that the man beside me won his world title in December. We were just saying...
Everybody wants to get paid before Christmas.
That's it. And you can enjoy your turkey.
Get me a big fight before Christmas.
It just seems there's always really good fights in December. It looks like the same is going to apply this year. There's another one there. I'm looking at Pulev and Huey Fury.
Yeah.
Obviously, Tyson Fury gets most of the limelight, but Huey Fury is definitely one to watch.
He's a baby in heavyweight terms. Like, yeah. He's still... Mm.
And he's kind of a wild card in the pack, because he's highly rated. And if he wins this, he's going to be the mandatory for Joshua. And that will kind of scrump. It depends if Hennessy and the IBA force that mandatory, but it kind of scrumpers all these plans that seem to be being laid out. You know, there's guys circling around the champions like Dillian White and Jerrell Miller, who's due to fight. And they're all waiting their time, you know, seeing if they can get a shot. But if Fury beats Pulev, then he's kind of put himself in the frame as well and has a serious, you know, serious claim to be the next challenger to Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, and we're obviously going to get into the fight this weekend, but might just get a quick word on Joshua against Povetkin next weekend. Like, a lot of people, for some reason, are writing this off as something of a walkover for Joshua, but Povetkin's a serious operator. Only Klitschko has, you know, been able to curb him. But what do you think is going to happen? I know you know Povetkin well.
Yeah, well, the only thing he's got going against him is his age. What's he now, 38, 37? Yeah. It's a lot of miles on the clock, you know, and considering he had an extensive amateur background, you know. But you look at it, they're two super heavyweight Olympic champions, and he's only lost to Klitschko, and Joshua Klitschko was on a knife edge. You know, at one point it could have gone the other way. So they're evenly matched. He kind of, to me, has a cloud over him because of the failed drug test, Povetkin. Yeah. You know, and he's not a fighter I want to back. I don't think he should be getting these type of opportunities.
Yeah.
But he's definitely a dangerous fighter, and he's got real schooling. There's real science to the boxing that he does. You don't come from that Russian amateur program and be number one in that country without knowing what you're doing. He's not. Besides Vladimir, he's definitely Joshua's best test. Definitely his best opponent.
Is that just where Joshua is now, that he can't fight these, he can't have these handy fights anymore? Like, he's got to the top now, he's not going to have easy fights anymore.
Yeah, and I'm sure the governing bodies are pushing the, like, he's not going to have them. Some fights will be easier than others, and this might be an easy fight for him, just because Povetkin is not that mobile, probably not that fast, and he's aging, and he'll be at the end of Joshua's punches, and, you know, Joshua will just stand in the middle of the ring as he does and let those straight punches go, the odd hook here and there, and he'll probably break Povetkin down. Probably will stop him mid to late rounds. That's what I think. But if there is a chance Joshua leaves his chin up in the air, throws a slow jab out there, leaves his chin dangling, and Povetkin throws the overhand right, which he's likely to do, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a huge ask for Povetkin, because he's got to try and get inside the huge frame of Joshua, try to get in close to him, try to work the body, and then take his chances when he can. And I'm not sure if he's able to do it anymore at the age he's at, you know?
Good stuff. Well, that one's on Saturday week, and we'll be chatting about GGG Canelo soon. But we turn now to what was a big weekend in the welterweight division, as Sean Porter saw off Danny Garcia to reclaim his portion of the world title. A few hours earlier, it was Amir Khan who was looking to put himself back in the frame when he took on Samuel Vargas. Safe to say, though, things didn't go entirely to plan.
And here comes Amir Khan with a burst, and down goes Vargas inside the only 20 seconds of the second round. And it's this hand speed again that Phil LaGreco couldn't deal with.
He's pushing down Vargas.
Oh, here's the left from Vargas, and down goes Khan. And there is the problem for the British fight fans and for Amir Khan. Chin, that vulnerability, that drama, it's happened again. Oh my!
You know, in terms of a performance that's going to step him onto world level, it's pointless judging it, Adam, to be honest. I don't want to be too harsh, but you've got to be realistic. A Keith Thurman, a Garcia, a Porter even. I mean,
well, the crowd are rot. They are Amir Khan fans, and they are celebrating. And it is 12 rounds in the bank, and it is a convincing points win.
That was Sky Sports' call of Amir Khan's hard-fought but unanimous win over Samuel Vargas in Birmingham. I think it's safe to say Carl Froch and Amir Khan won't be exchanging Christmas cards, will they?
No, that's going back a while, though. I remember when Garcia knocked Khan out, Froch was on commentary that night. Or not, he wasn't on commentary, but he was part of the Sky setup, and he said Amir Khan should consider retiring after another knockout, and obviously since then he's been knocked out by Canelo.
Yeah, it's funny, but like, there seems to be two schools of thought. One of them is sort of the one that's presiding more, but one of them is that after 43 seconds against LaGreco, Khan needed rounds, and it's kind of beneficial if he is going to step up to have that in the tank. Whereas the overriding school of thought seems to be that, you know, that was a performance. If you have any intention of getting back to elite level, you need to be dealing with Sammy Vargas in more clinical fashion than that. What do you think of that one?
Well, I wonder what Kell Brook thought. He was sitting ringside, and there's obviously so much talk about Khan and Brook, and we've just said it earlier about fights being made. I just listened to Khan after, it sounded like he'd no intentions of fighting Kell Brook. Mm. He sounds like he wants to fight Pacquiao. But it's funny, Tyson Fury obviously had a couple of years out, comes back, wins his first fight back in four rounds, then he goes the distance with his next fight. And, you know, people talk about, yeah, it was good that he got the rounds. But see, the problem, Khan gets the rounds, but the brutality of that knockout against Canelo.
Yeah.
I can see why people are worried, is it going to end badly for Khan again?
Yeah, I suppose you can't really underestimate what drawing power he has left. Like, it's difficult to walk away when that was the highest, or the most watched fight in Sky Sports boxing history. So, Amir Khan's still a big name in boxing.
Still a big name to the general public. Mm. The fact that it was on regular Sky probably lends to the fact that it was, and there wasn't much going on in other sporting events at the weekend in terms of Premier League. But
not a fan of the Nations League, and
I don't think I watched them. I watched a bit of the Ireland match and switched it off fairly soon. Khan still is a draw. He's still a name.
Yeah.
He's a sensational, it can be a sensational fighter. You know, when he's doing what he does well and does it well, he's explosive. He's speed, and he's devastating. But I think I wouldn't read too much into this fight. The warning signs that were there in that fight have been there for a long time, and he's continued. No one was calling for it back when he got knocked out by Prescott. No one was calling for it when he got stopped by, you know, all these hard fights and getting dropped here and there. I think he's fighting Sammy Vargas, so he's preparing to fight Sammy Vargas. He wasn't preparing to fight Kell Brook or Porter Gas, any of the other top guys. And I think he had him down, looking like he was going to finish him, and then it goes, drags out a bit more, gets put down himself, and then he's kind of embarrassed, and he's kind of, you know, he kind of has to be cautious himself. I think he got the rounds in, and I can see why people are saying he should retire. I don't know. I think there's a little bit of an anti-Amir Khan bias out or sentiment out there, especially from some of the boxing media.
Is it because he is quite cocky? And I mean,
I don't know.
If you're cocky, you got to back it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did up until a certain point.
There seems to, even though with Khan, there seems to be a like, disconnect from reality with him when he speaks, you know. Yeah. He's, I listen to Steve Bunce said he's a smart guy, but he's not a smart boxer. But yeah. I don't know if he is a smart guy. What he is an instinctual box fighter, you know. And he does things he doesn't even know he's doing it. You know, he let his hands go. And but clever fighters that doesn't work against, like with Garcia, you just got to time him coming in, because he starts his flurry from so far a distance that you just time him coming in and you can catch him, you know. So like, I haven't seen, like, he's working with Joe Goosen now, and I haven't seen any changes or any improvement. Joe Goosen's a great cornerman and is a great coach. He's worked with some of the best fighters in the world over the last how many years. But like, I don't know how serious Khan took the fight going into it, and then he ended up, like, those fights will always be tough when and there's nothing really on the line, and it's kind of a transitional fight to something bigger. They're always tricky to navigate, you know.
Exactly.
You've got more to lose than to gain.
It's funny, like, because you were in a similar position when you fought Anto Fitzgerald that time. Mm. Like, you were switching trainers. It was your first fight after Chavez, I think, and first fight with Adam Booth. So you were obviously probably working on specific things.
Yeah, you're working on a style, and, well, in that, you're dealing with the emotion of being in the dressing room and in a fight without the man who'd been there all those times. Just, you know, so a little bit different, but... Yeah, I don't know, like, that's Amir Khan's fifth coach, you know, in his career. He's had those problems with every coach. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know if any, like, with Freddie Roach, he was kind of a mover and a raider. He kind of raided, used his speed of hand and feet. And there doesn't seem to be much change from that. He's just got to, like, for him, I can see why he wants to fight Pacquiao. Kell Brook's certainly a harder fight, and it's a less glamorous fight, you know, in terms of world boxing. And
when he looks sparred with Pacquiao as well, he probably fancies a chance.
And when they look back, when Khan looks back on his career 10 years after retirement, he's got Manny Pacquiao on the record, you know.
That's the overriding thing, like Phil was saying to me the other day, that he's like Keegan's Newcastle, like he's all action, you have to watch him when he's on. But it's just, he's got that blistering hand speed and like, it's probably unparalleled.
And the fact that, like you said, he's vulnerable, so that it makes for exciting fights. You never know when.
But it seems that like the Garcia fight, the Danny Garcia fight, like he had that fight in the bag more or less. Mm. He was boxing brilliantly. He just got greedy. Like he was like, I'm landing 4, 5, 6 punch combinations. And then Garcia was just timing him.
Yeah, he had it in the bag, but Garcia was reading it all the way, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of, like, he tried that hook a few times before it landed. Mm. And he was getting closer every time. And it was just about timing.
Because I know what you do against Khan, though. You just bide your time because you know you're going to get that shot. And if you land it clean,
Khan can be disciplined and just say, I'm going to land and win the round, one round.
When he's at his best, like you said, when he's doing what he does well at his best and stays disciplined, his race is very hard to beat.
Like the Devin Alexander fight, granted, he's a bit of a non-puncher, but that's a clinic. Like, that's a 12-round shutout against the former world champion. And he was so focused and switched on.
Like the performance, like Kantanlik, just being disciplined and focused for the
Maidana.
For the 3 minutes of each round.
Maidana is the one that, if you talk about Amir Khan's chin, there's an asterisk, and then see the Maidana fight, he takes some serious punches towards the end of that fight, and he got through it. So was that just a good night for him, where maybe his chin went against the usual?
It's just a lapse of concentration and not seeing the punches coming, you know, because as I said, he starts his attack, or has done, it's a bad mistake or bad habit he has, from so far out that he's usually in the midst of throwing a punch himself from a far position, that he gets caught coming into punches, you know, when he's trying to throw his own punch, and you don't see them and they have double the impact, and that's been his downfall, you know.
Yeah, and just a couple of pieces of housekeeping on that bill. There was some Irish interest. Sean McComb and Stephen Donnelly got wins on that card. Tommy Langford and Jason Welburn. That was another fight of the year contender between those lads. And just to show you that upsets do happen in boxing, like Sam Eggington, 1-50 favourite going into that fight. It was a tick over to set up Brandon Rios next week, taken out in 2 rounds by someone who's not really a light middleweight at all. So these things do happen. And then Lewis Ritson, who's like probably my favourite fighter at the moment.
He's always banging on about Lewis Ritson.
I love Lewis Ritson, but
why do you love him?
He's the fairy tale story. Like when he fought Robbie Barrett for the British title, he had an electrician's job lined up for the following Monday because, you know, he wasn't going anywhere. Cleaned Robbie Barrett out, and it's just spectacular knockout after spectacular knockout. He's fighting for a European title next month. It's just a great story. Like there's a lot to it. He went to Scotland, it didn't work out up there. Now he's training with his dad. No, and he's a great fighter to watch, like pressure fighter. So hopefully he goes far. It's all about levels, which you know.
It's
all
levels, yeah. And like you said, the Welburn, Longford fight. It's not fight of the year to me because the standard was so poor.
Yeah.
And it's a domestic fight of the year if that, you know, because I got to like the end. Towards the end, they're just like looking at each other like, you hit me, I'll hit you, slur, you know. Yeah, like, right, you know, but those guys are at a certain level, they will, you know, they will.
There are some fights like that, like, it's like your turn, my turn. Like when Leo Santa Cruz fought Abner Maris there recently, it was literally like they'd land 5 punches on one of them and then the other guy would land. It's just,
they have to save up their energy after throwing their punches. Like, I'm taking a break now, you hit me for a bit.
Yeah. Bit like Gatti and Ward.
Yeah.
All right. A few hours later, we had the premier welterweight matchup of the night as former champions Danny Garcia and Sean Porter battled it out for the vacant WBC title in Brooklyn. One man who really enjoyed it was referee Steve Willis, who Andy has memories of, I'm sure. I wish I loved my job as much as Steve Willis.
Yeah. He's a great referee. Like, and that only adds to it, all that, you know.
There's your experience.
You know, he actually, like, I think it was the second knockdown or something, Quillen had stepped on my foot and hit me at the same time. And as he's counting, he says, I'm sorry.
Really?
He realised. I was like, he said, he stepped on my foot. I was on it. And he's like, oh, yeah. You know. But
referees always make that call, or are they directed by the people outside? If that's
He started counting before. You know, it looked like a knockdown. Just then he realised that what had happened. But he's a good guy too, and a good referee.
Always talking. What was interesting in that fight actually was he doesn't tend to break the fighters up. You could hear him actually prompt them and say, you got to work it out. So he wants the fighters to break themselves up almost.
Yeah, referees are so important, aren't they? Like in terms of the, like I say, quality, quote unquote quality of a fight, but what actually goes on, because it just depends. They're in so much in control of what's a clinch, what's not a clinch.
Well, look.
When you're free to punch.
Look at your little intro. stop at any time, ref stop at any time, Gary Ward. We would never have that, no, we never had that fight. Had the referee could have stopped it at any time, you know what I mean? Well, how many, but he let it go, you know?
Yeah.
And there are some referees that are like that, you know, who will let fights go, like Steve Smoger. He's one of my, he was my always like my, one of my favorite referees to referee me, because he would let fights go. And if you were taking it, like, you knew he's not going to jump in unless you're really, he knew, I don't know, he knew what it, what the fight, he could almost feel what the fighter was going through, and that he knew, like, okay, he's taking shots, but he's not in trouble, so I let the fight go. And that's what fighters, like, as a fighter, that's what jump, but also the caveat that they have to protect the fighters,
yeah,
you know, because they will want to go, but they'll know,
fighters,
yeah,
though. They must know with certain fighters,
yeah,
that,
oh, he's got a record of coming back, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I remember when that was one of George Groves' big gripes when he lost the first Carl Froch fight, because Carl Froch was arguably, like, more hurt in that fight earlier on than Groves was when it was finished. And, like, it was as if Howard Foster had the notion in his head, oh, Groves is a bit chinny, do you know, maybe I need to protect him here, whereas Froch's iron jaw, he went down heavy, but he let him get back.
It's like divers in soccer, you know, they get, oh, you die,
but reputation,
might, might actually be a free.
Plus, Froch was the champion, maybe that, that helped them.
But just a word on Sean Porter, like, I was really impressed, you know, generally he tends to just drown his opponents with pressure and see what happens, but in this one he almost sacrificed the first couple of rounds to give Danny Garcia something to think about, and it was as if Garcia was just thrown off his game. You could see that Angel Garcia was kind of, he read it early, he was like, Porter's not really doing what we were expecting here. So were you surprised to see him come with such a nuanced game plan there?
Well, I don't know if you've seen Danny Garcia's tweet. He's watched the fight back and he thinks he won the fight. Yeah, it was very close. A lot of the rounds, it's obviously interpretation. But I suppose I was surprised with how inactive Porter was in the first few rounds, because anytime you watch him, he's just all action.
Yeah.
So then you were kind of thinking, what's he got up his sleeve? So they obviously, that was their game plan.
Yeah. And obviously Errol Spence got into the ring afterwards, and that's an easy fight to make. They're both Al Haymon guys, and there's a bit of back and forth on social media between Terence Crawford and Spence. So, like, a lot of people thought the post-Mayweather era was going to be a bit dreary for the welterweight division, but it's actually been a bit of a watershed, because now it's brought through the new crop. They're all fighting each other. Keith Thurman, who some would argue is the best of the bunch, is still to come back. Whether he's still got the hunger remains to be seen, but there's tiers in the welterweight division, and there's an elite tier right there.
Yeah.
And there's some really good fighters, you know, pushing the standard as well.
Who's the best?
Hard to call. Crawford, probably.
Yeah.
Crawford, but the only thing is, I don't know, there might not be legitimate, but the time they fight, he might be a little bit undersized at welterweight compared to the other ones who'd be coming down from much higher. He's just come up to the weight. He's got a tough fight in fighting Jesse Benavidez. It's not an easy fight.
No.
But he's the guy, when you watch Crawford, you think he could match it or hang it with anybody, any welterweight at any era. You know, he could probably hang out with, like, sort of Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns. Maybe not Hearns, because Hearns is so big, but, like, he could hang with those guys, because he's really is a throwback, old-school fighter.
Yeah.
You look at Spence, he doesn't do a thing wrong. Everything he does is so correct and clinical. It's just toss-up between them two.
Thurman is
a wildcat. He's an underrated boxer. He's a big puncher, but he's an underrated boxer, and he showed that against Garcia, so... Yeah, it's a great division.
Yeah, because, like, there's just levels within levels, because Garcia and Thurman went into that fight as champions, but Thurman was just slightly better and Porter just slightly better. So there is just...
What do you think about Danny Garcia now, though? He's lost two of his last three.
I was never overly sold on Danny. Like, I thought he lost to Lamont Peterson that time.
I thought so too, yeah.
And Lamont, like, beat Amir Khan, and that was kind of contentious as well.
That was a crazy fight, though. So, there was mad stuff going on in that fight.
I think I don't think Spence would struggle with Lamont Peterson. I don't think Thurman would either. So that's just...
Well, in his day, Lamont was a serious
fighter. At 147, though.
Yeah, a serious fighter. It's hard to know what Garcia does in his comments after the fight. He didn't seem too bothered, you know. He wasn't too, like, he wasn't roaring. He wasn't, like, upset or dejected. He was just, I got to go home, have a rest, and see what I do then.
Yeah.
Too much money. It's hard. What the heck to say? It's hard to get up and run at 5 a.m. when you're in silk pajamas. You know, it's
good, because the 147 division was kind of what kept boxing ticking over when it was in the doldrums a little bit. You know, there was the Mayweather-Pacquiao intrigue, but you know, it's one of the hottest divisions at the moment, and deep, as we said there. Like, Kell Brook's almost the one that got away a little bit, because it seems like he lost his best years there. Off the back of that Porter fight, he should have been kicking on. Mm-hmm. And he's a real welterweight. Like, he's a built for that division, and it's kind of passing by a little bit.
He's never been the same since the Golovkin fight.
No.
I know it was two defeats, or Golovkin and Errol Spence Jr. Like, there's no shame in that, two great boxers, but I just think the damage he would have taken in the Golovkin fight.
Mm. Yeah, it was...
Not so much the damage, but going up in weight, coming back down.
Yeah, Roy Jones talks about that all the time, that big jump and coming back.
He's paying the price now for that. You know, he has to be commended, because it was a brave decision to go fight Golovkin. But
some would say it was crazy.
It was reckless. It was one of those ones.
He probably
needed to be protected from himself. Though.
Well, it was all these negotiations with Chris Eubank Jr. Are they going to fight? And then last minute, Kell Brook steps in. You know, I don't know. It seems like he was probably given a sizable check, and that was what swayed him. You know what I mean? That was probably the only reason he fought Golovkin, because from a career point of view. It has been disastrous.
I kind of got the feeling, just watching him in Birmingham on Saturday night, that he needs the Khan fight more than Khan, because he's looking for this thing to revive his career a bit. Now, sure, he could fight one of the... Well, Errol Spence Jr. came over and beat him. Mm. So is he going to get another shot at him?
He could, because he's still a name. But he needs the Khan fight, because Khan's such a huge name in the UK, and he knows he's got the... Probably knows he's got the beating of Khan now. And... Yeah, it is. Like, Khan's probably thinking, why should I give him the opportunity? You know, why should I even give him the platform?
Yeah.
And because they don't like each other, really, you know. So, I don't know. It's a tricky one for him, you know. Where does he go? Who's he going to fight? He's 154 now.
Yeah.
Who does he mix with there?
Some big boys at 154, like Jared Hurd and Charlie.
Huge guys.
Big guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to turn now to what feels like the most hotly anticipated rematch of recent times. That's Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez, who are getting set to renew hostilities in Las Vegas this weekend.
118 to 110 for Canelo. 115, 113 for Triple G. 114, 114, a three-way split. This is officially a draw.
118, 110 for Canelo. That did not happen. That is fiction.
Draw. I did not have Canelo winning the fight.
Triple G won this fight.
I mean, you'd rather lose a fight than draw.
You try to calm down.
Canelo will make it look so easy, it will erase any doubt.
Of course I want a rematch. I want big drama show.
Told you, son.
The biggest fight in boxing. Two elite stars. Look my belt. I still champion. I want a fight. I want a true fight.
There you have it. So just days to go now until that rematch takes place. And I know both of you watched or rewatched the fight there recently. Did your opinion of the scorecards change on second viewing? Or?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was very emotional after the fight. It was early in the morning. I obviously was knackered from staying up to watch it. And I was sure Golovkin won it by three rounds. Watched it back last week. And I thought, oof, that is a lot closer than I remember. Maybe you could just give it to Golovkin by one round.
Yeah, it seemed like most of the boxing media, or arguably the mainstream media, was kind of banging the drum that Golovkin was robbed. But I remember you came in possibly the Monday after and just said, you know, that was a very close fight. And that was my feeling at the time. Mm. I thought maybe 7-5, Golovkin, something like that. And that, when I rewatched it, it was similar. Like, it seemed, strangely, considering he's, you know, one of the biggest names in the sport, he seemed a little bit overawed by the occasion, because like, he'd obviously been blowing these guys away, but Canelo was more used to the, like, he'd fought Floyd Mayweather obviously, so he was used to the grandiose nature of the event. And the first three rounds, Golovkin just never really got going, did he?
I wouldn't say it was the event. I think it was what Canelo was doing in front of him.
Right.
That really, it was probably a little bit of the event, maybe the build up and all that. But also what he was seeing in front of him was better. Or wasn't like he had faced before, because Canelo was always in position. Although, like, he, first round he kind of retreated, but he was always in position. And then after, like, say maybe the first minute, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, he starts holding his ground. And in some senses, he's not really pushing Golovkin back, but he's holding his feet the whole time. And anything that Golovkin did, it was a counter, and they were coming back hard and fast, and from different angles. And that will stop any, like, you know what I mean? You're not gonna throw punches if you know that there's a fella in front of you who's gonna make you pay for it, you know? So I think it was that's why he started so slow. Traditionally, he's not been a slow starter, Golovkin. He usually goes straight to work, you know. He might let a guy, when he's been fighting those like guys who's able to do it, he might let a guy touch him for a little bit, let it, like, so he can just feel something on his chin or and adapt, and then know what he's dealing with. Then he takes him out. But no, I think it was what Canelo tired during the middle rounds, and Golovkin had that really good period in the middle. But there's an argument that Canelo won the first three rounds, and after that, then like four and five, they're kind of here and there, and then Golovkin wins those middle rounds, and then the last three rounds, Canelo definitely went. I think he wins 10, and he might win. He definitely wins 12 for me. 11 is arguable again. So, like, the fight was overshadowed by that scorecard by Adelaide Bird, and it really did this fight a disservice because it was a classic. You know, in terms of skill level athleticism, what was on show, it was a classic fight.
This could be even better.
This could be better. Now, like, all that's happened in between, it makes for a better fight. We're in, like, there's been some little bit of needle between them. I wouldn't say bad mouth, but a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And it will make for a better fight.
And have you any issue with the ethics around it at all? Like, the fact that, do you have any problem with Canelo getting such a big payday and such a big primetime spot after it's only like 6 months since he was banned?
Yeah, absolutely. His Mexican beef. It's, yeah, if he wins on Saturday and he's the first fighter to defeat Golovkin, you'd be very sympathetic towards Golovkin, because you'd be thinking in other sports he would have been thrown out.
Yeah.
Or certainly for a bit longer. But money talks, and they'd be thinking Golovkin's not getting any younger. The first fight was good. I'd say as well, Canelo's camp probably felt very good after the first fight, thinking, you know, he took the best shots at Golovkin, and, you know, he was able to stand with him toe to toe. And when they fight a year down the line, Golovkin's a year older, and Canelo will probably be a lot more confident going into it.
And Golovkin's obviously on the last lap of his career now, but you have experience with him in the amateurs. You boxed him a while ago. Do you know there was something special on your hands when you were fighting him, or was it just another Eastern
European? I had no idea who he was, you know. And I wasn't even aware that Kazakh were a strong nation in boxing, you know, Kazakhstan. And it was second fight in the World Championships, and yeah, I was just did my best just to hang in there with him, you know. I was getting hit, and I didn't even know where the punches were coming from. You know, he was an aggressive counterpuncher as an amateur. He's kind of adapted his style now. He's more of a pressure fighter, as a pro. But like you said, what's happened in between? It would only have benefited Canelo this whatever it was, 6 months off.
Yeah,
Golovkin's had a fight in between that, so he's had another training camp and he's had another fight. So that's more wear and tear on an already, you know, long amateur and pro career. So, I don't know, like, the way I see Canelo winning the fight, the way things are going, like, Golovkin's definitely been getting tired a lot more later in the fights. You know, when you look at Danny Jacobs, how he came on strong towards the end, and even Canelo in that fight, like, when Golovkin needed to push in that fight, it was Canelo who was pushing, you know, down the stretch. Going back to the blood test and the drug test, and it's kind of gets brushed swept under the car. It's kind of like in boxing anyway. Boxing's not as strict as other sports when it comes to bans and stuff like that. And
which is ridiculous. I don't know, you've talked about it before.
Yeah.
Your life is just in jeopardy.
There will be tested now. They've signed the Favada in this, and I read that Golovkin has been tested 18 times since this fight has been signed. 12 urine tests and 6 blood tests.
Yeah.
So you'd imagine that that came from Golovkin's team. So you'd imagine that Canelo's been done the same. But it's what you do out of camp that can really have the benefits, because when you don't get tested out of training camp or out of contract for fights, you can have all these benefits where you build your and then they will carry into training camp, you know. So I don't know. Boxing has a lot of issues with doping, and they have to really tackle it. But there's no real will, because there's so much money involved. There's no real will.
And people want to see Canelo and Golovkin again.
They want to see fights, and the money that's involved in the sport in general, no one wants to cancel fights or big events, because their livelihoods depend on it.
So we've obviously watched the fight back a few times. Obviously, Canelo's camp and Golovkin's camp have watched it back several times. Is Golovkin going to change anything, do you think?
One simple thing he could have done, and I've watched the fight, and I think Barry Jones says it in commentary, and I spoke with Sugar Hill last night, I was talking to him about the fight, the Kronk coach. When Golovkin was pressing, he got Canelo to the ropes, he threw a right hand every time he threw it straight. He never once looped it. And all Canelo was doing was drifting off to his left. Like, conventionally, against a strong puncher with a right hand, you move away from the right hand, so you move to your right, you know. But Canelo was always, I don't know what they saw, but whatever tactics they had, it was to move to his left. From the start of the fight, he was moving to the left. And that's the harder side to move to. It's more draining to move to that side, because naturally it's easier to move. If you're an orthodox, it's easier to move to your right because you're almost facing that way. He was moving to his left, and any time Golovkin threw the right hand, he just watched it and he just breezed off, just turned off. And had Golovkin turned his right hand into a hook, a long hook, he might have caught him, but he never did it, never really did it once. And like, it was such an easy adjustment to make that he might do that, but
body shots. I don't know. He didn't throw body shots.
Yeah, because all these things that you can't do, look at the jab, like the Golovkin jab, it's probably been his best weapon in these last five or six fights. You look at Lemieux, Jacobs, he breaks those guys down with jabs. But he couldn't jab because, Canelo was winning the jab, at the jab ball, and he was getting countered every time he jabbed. You know, he would throw one jab and he was getting caught with three or four shots in return. And an angle of shots. Like, it's hard to see what Golovkin does differently. He's going to have to make some adjustments somewhere. He's going to have to go for it from the start. And he's going to have to eat a bit. He's going to have to take a bit, because Canelo will be sharp, razor sharp, and especially in those early rounds. He's going to have to take some punishment and just bound for it. Like, Canelo can't maintain that kind of focus and athletic punching for that many rounds. That's why he does tire, and usually has a period in fights where he has to take some time off, and he sees, like, with even against like Cotto, where that was a close fight, but they gave it to Canelo. So because in that fight he was taking a lot of rounds off.
Yeah.
Because when you kind of fight with that explosive, when you rely on explosive energy, you have to like throw your punches, five or six bursts, bam, 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 and then you have to just breathe and take. You have to pace yourself and move around, and it does it exacts from, you know, it takes it out of you. And like, he's always going to have periods, Canelo, where he's going to have to take rounds off or parts of rounds off, and that's where Golovkin's going to have to work.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to ask you about was Golovkin's footwork, because it doesn't get talked about an awful lot, but Cal Burke has spoken about it before, and it's more like, we compare him to Sean Porter in the sense that Sean Porter is reckless and it's robust pressure, like he's just coming forward throwing shots, whereas Golovkin, because you're aware of the power he has and he's always in position, like, it's almost, you're almost obliged to throw a shot when you don't want to.
Yeah, that's what he done when I fought him in the amateurs. He presses you, he gets so close to you, you're uncomfortable, and you throw a punch out of panic, you know, out of like stress and anxiety, like, you know, you let a punch go, and next thing you know, he slipped it, and he's just waiting for that punch to come. He slipped it, and he's bang, bang, bang. He's hitting you with three or four. But he's always in position. What it does for most fighters, it's mental pressure.
Yeah.
Because you never get that reprieve. You know, with most fighters, they throw an exchange, and then they move around, and then they come back together. It doesn't happen with him. He's on you all the time. But Canelo was kind of, for want of a better word, he just nothing it. He just rode the punches, tucked them on the gloves when he did. Like, he didn't really get hit too clean in that fight, you know. To say that he was in there with Golovkin, you know, the best middleweight in the world, Canelo was still unproven as a middleweight, you know, going into that fight. He was in there with the best middleweight in the world, and you could say he got hit maybe a handful of times clean. You know.
Yeah, the more eye-catching punches, like if you watch any of the highlights, it's always Canelo's big right hands. Yeah. And
the uppercuts.
Yeah,
the uppercuts.
They were very successful. Then.
And the counters.
Like, there's one that did the rounds of, he knocked James Kirkland out with his right hand, he knocked Amir Khan out with, he can maybe discount
that one.
Yeah. And then Golovkin is unmoved by the same shot. How demoralising is that? Like, you're obviously a big puncher. If you land on someone and they're just unperturbed by it, is that kind of...
Yeah, it was happening for both guys though. And it happened for Golovkin too. You know, Golovkin landed his shots, and You know when a good shot is landed because a fighter will shake his head, like, it's his little tell, you know, like,
yeah, I did that a few times. Yeah.
Both of them were at it, you know, and there were little exchanges between them, like looks and glints in the eyes and half smiles at you. You knew they were hurting each other. But it takes a lot of resolve. When you've landed your best punch and a guy just keeps coming, you have to say, okay, let's pull up my socks here, pull up my shorts, and, you know, roll these gloves up a bit more and I'll catch him with the next one. But they were landing a heavy shot, and there was, like, if anything, Canelo was the better body puncher in the first fight. Like, it's like, I feel conflicted that I'm talking so positively about Canelo, especially since he's tested positive for drugs after this fight, and that he's going into this one off the back of that. But, like, and Golovkin would be a friend of mine, and all the people in K2, Tom Loefer and all those guys, I'd be very close with them. But from a neutral point of view, I think Canelo was probably the favourite going into the fight. And what's your prediction?
I think Canelo's going to win as well. Like, if it takes the same pattern as the first fight, I think Canelo's just that little bit fresher. Like, people forget it's 12 months. Like, it's a long time has gone by. Like, it was kind of with the David Haye, Tony Bellew, obviously different level of quality there, but it was almost discounted, the big gap in between, you know, and like what had gone on. So I just think Canelo can make more adjustments to win this fight at this stage of his career than Golovkin can.
Yeah, and it'd be a sad way for Golovkin to start. He already is on the decline, you can tell, like, but he's been at the very, very top. When they say he's on the decline, you're talking...
Yeah, it's relative, like...
Yeah.
Still the best middleweight in the world.
Yeah,
but he's not as dominant as he once was, that kind of way, yeah.
Is it a case that he has to knock him out to win? Is that what we're thinking?
Like, Abel Sanchez has built his brand on Mexican style, and it was almost as if you made the point there that maybe Golovkin landed a big shot and Canelo was unmoved, and he thought, I might revert to type here and go back to my amateur boxing style. And he basically won the fight, you know, at distance. Like, once he got, we were talking about getting Canelo into position, but once he got him there, it was just single shots. This time he's just going to have to get his nose in there maybe and, like, take chances, take some to give some.
Yeah, it'll be... He spoke about going for the knockout. You know, he won't allow it to go to the scorecards again. That could be, saying it and doing it is two different things, you know.
Yeah.
But there were really small adjustments that he can make. You know, I said it's hard to see what he can do differently. It will be the footwork. You know, it'll be going in and out of range more so. And, you know, when he's had this series of fights where he's fought guys, where he's been able to walk them down, throw punches, never be conscious or think too much about what's coming back at him because they haven't had any venom, you know? And then he goes in with a guy like Canelo who's, from the off, is stinging him, and he realises, okay, I'm getting hurt here and this guy's not standing around, you know, even though I'm manoeuvring him, he still has exits. So he'll have to be more switched on from the start. He's going to have to use better footwork. Like, when they first came out for the first round and the first fight, they both had a good bounce in their step. But as the fight wore on, they both kind of settled into, like, a more stepping routine. Golovkin was to try and, if he can, keep that kind of bounce in his feet to where he can dart in and out of distance and not look for one attack. Because Canelo will always fire back. And what Golovkin used to do as an amateur was he'd come with one attack, you'd fire back at him, and he was always out of range but in position to come back at you again. And that's what he's going to have to do, kind of revert back to his amateur style, because if Golovkin was fighting him as the amateur that he used to be, he'd win the fight, you know? And
I think so,
he was a sensational amateur, Golovkin. He didn't win the Olympics, but he came up against a very experienced Russian, Guy Dabekov, and it was just a match of styles and a little bit of politics too.
Yeah, and rematch psychology is obviously interesting because... Mm. Like, is this going to be round 13, or is it kind of going to assume a similar pattern feeling out process at the start? Because we talked about Gaddy Ward there earlier. It's like, it was basically just 30 rounds in a row, like, of there was no feeling out process. But you had one with Brian Vere, obviously.
Mm.
Was it kind of, did you just, like, was the slate wiped clean and you just assumed it again?
For me, it was because I had fought the wrong fight the first time. And the second fight I did what I should have done the first time. And it was a completely different fight. But like you said, it's hard to see where these guys can make adjustments. Mm. If they do, they'll only be slight. So it might be round 13. But the difference in this fight is that the history that's happened now, the failed drug test, the cancellation of the fight that should have been in May, and that spread some bad blood between them. You know, you've seen the quotes from Golovkin talking about respect, and Canelo doesn't respect the sport, and anybody who cheats the fans, and anybody who follows him, what did he call them, swindlers. That's what Golovkin said. And then Canelo fired back with a nice little line and said, how many champions has Golovkin fought? Very few.
Mm-hmm.
That's not respecting the sport. So there is a little bit of bad blood there now.
Yeah, it's, it, like the first
and,
one was
kind yeah. of, yeah. And people like, you know, Golovkin's had this good boy image, you know. Golovkin, good boy, the GGG. But yeah. now he's kind of coming, he's shown a little bit of metal. And that's always been there, but now it's nice to see him be himself and be honest.
Definitely.
But is there a chance that with that in mind, he's going to have so much fire in his belly? I know obviously he has to keep calm in the ring, but determination, he's going to go from the first bell. Because in the first fight, it was all about who's going to control the centre of the ring. And Canelo stood there with him. And gradually as the fight went, you know, he drops back, gets on the ropes a bit, but he's not taking too much of a punishment. So does Canelo come out from round one this time and say, right, I am going to make sure that this fight doesn't go to the judges' scorecards and, you know, I'm going to show you about respect?
It's funny because it's always trotted out, like, these guys straight up don't like each other, that kind of thing. But did you ever find that was a real motivating factor, or did you find it easier to be dispassionate about it?
Yeah, always, it's always easy.
Adam Booth is such a calculated guy that he would kind of discourage that kind of thing,
would he? And I don't think I fought too many people that I didn't really like, you know, or respect. But I think it's always better to have... Well, you can't let emotion... As soon as you allow emotion in a fight, you've lost, because you have to shut that part off. You can't fight. Emotion is an energy that will only take you so far. And in the fight, it might translate to two or three rounds. Because once that's drained out of you, you got nothing left. If you're trying to feed off emotion as an energy source, it won't last. Definitely a finite thing. So these guys are going to have to be cool and calculated. And once the bell goes, it'll all be business.
Is it for the good of boxing, though? We need Golovkin to win.
Yeah, well, see, it's kind of like, who cares? If Canelo wins, do people really care about his failed drug test? We do. The media do. People in general do. But do fight fans really? The fact that the governing bodies don't care, that they're allowing this fight to happen, it's for all the belts, it's for the biggest prize in boxing. So they have to set the tone. Like, they have to make the punishment match the crime for us to care. You know, I don't know. It's a nasty one. I'm sure Golovkin cares, you know. Like, when he thinks, like, he's had that tough fight and he was in there with a guy who might have been doping.
Yeah.
So predictions-wise, I think you've already said it there, but so as heart says Golovkin, head says Canelo, is that kind of the general vibe?
Yeah.
I'm still sticking with
Golovkin because I'm expecting a better performance from him this time. Maybe it is the heart. Maybe the heart's too strong that I can't think with the head.
Yeah, and we obviously have to mention that our own Gary Spike O'Sullivan fights on the undercard. Big middleweight encounter with David Lemieux, former IBF world champion. So it's been mooted as a fireworks encounter, you know, two big punchers. How do you think that one's going to play out?
I think it's definitely a fight. There's no other way it can play out. Neither guy is known to box. They got no only one way. That's come forward, hands high, and hook. And we'll see who has the best hook. They will. This fight's not going the distance. They're going to come for it, and it will be explosive. Both. It's a 50-50 fight. 50-50 fight. And both of them are big punches.
It'd be huge if Spike beat someone of that caliber.
Yeah, it would be a huge result. But he's definitely capable of doing it. Lemieux hasn't looked good in years, and he's not the force he was, you know. And I think that kind of element of fear is gone from him, you know.
Yeah, and there's a huge carrot there. Obviously, Lemieux lost to Golovkin conclusively, but if Canelo were to win, you know, the winner of that fight's almost in the sweepstakes for Canelo. So there's a huge financial reward on offer here as well. And Spike, he has two losses on his record. Obviously, Billy Joe kind of was a technical fight and he just came up short there. And then Chris Eubank Jr. was a little bit of a disappointment because, looking back, he probably thinks he could have had his number, if he had maybe adjusted things. Obviously, got injured in the fight. But he's done so well to, get him, catapult himself back up to, basically chief support or third from the top on the biggest boxing event of recent times. And
it's a fuck, Golovkin.
He could have. And the Antoine Douglas fight was a big prospect.
Yeah.
And he took him out.
But it's about, I kind of news to, like, I was on here before a preview and I said, like, he's in there, he's going to beat this guy, Douglas, and he's got every chance of beating Lemieux. It depends what Lemieux has left, but I don't think he has too much. Like, he hasn't got, Lemieux hasn't got a jab. He just will barrel forward and try to throw jab, 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 hook, 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 and try and land one big punch. And Spike has never been in trouble in a fight, never really looked hurt, even against Eubank or anybody. So I think he'll soak it up and we'll come back. And I think I'm going to come out, like, I just, as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about it. Sullivan will stop him late. I think so. I think he'll pull out of the fight. I think Lemieux will for want of better, will shoot his load. I think Lemieux will do everything he can to try and stop Sullivan, and in doing so will blast himself out, and Sullivan will be sitting there ready to counter.
Like that, Douglas made a good start against Spike, and then it wasn't maybe as bad.
Douglas is a weak guy. Yeah. I think, you know, physically weak.
Like he boxed well for the first few rounds, and as soon as Spike just realised I can take this guy out, he just stepped it up, and it was like watching a man against a boy, exactly. And he just finished him. So yeah, I'd be confident that Spike could certainly get something in the later rounds.
If he beats him, it'll be an upset and it'll be a huge result for him. But he's definitely capable of doing that.
And he could sit there ringside and watch the other two.
Knowing he's going to fight the winner.
Yeah, it'd be a very good place to be for him.
Yeah. There you go. It's going to be a great card on Saturday in Las Vegas. We've got Jaime Munguia on the undercard as well. So there's going to be plenty of action there. We're going to let Andy go now and we're going to switch focus to events in the Octagon. After a night of thrills and spills at UFC 228, as Tyron Woodley cut short the Darren Till coronation.
We talk a lot about Woodley.
Submission here.
He does have a Darce choke on his resume. Darren Till not the tap and tight.
They got the tap.
The path to welterweight gold still goes to Missouri.
T. Wood.
Wow.
He shut it all down tonight, ladies and gentlemen. T. Wood.
And you want to mute the naysayers and the haters. He just handed Darren Till his first loss in MMA and finished him no less in round two.
I'm trying to remember the last time Tyron submitted somebody, if ever in the UFC. I don't think he's got a submission in the UFC.
He just got his black belt.
That was Tyron Woodley submitting pre-fight favorite Darren Till in Dallas. One man who knows Darren quite well is the MMA leg of Off the Brawl, Niall McGrath. Niall, how are things?
I'm great, Ronan. How are yourself?
Not too bad. What did you make of Saturday night?
Yeah, it was an interesting one. It was, you know, I did expect Tyron to win. I was a little bit bemused the fact Darren went in there as favourite. But in terms of what it means for Darren, obviously Darren is the guy that the UFC have tried to put a lot of hype behind. You know, I think it's a big, big learning curve for Darren. You know, I always like a fighter to have experienced a loss when they're going into a world title fight, especially in mixed martial arts. And I think we can sort of, you know, further down the line, take that into Habib Connor, which I think is going to be a disadvantage for Habib. But in terms of performance, I was pretty disappointed by Darren's performance. You know, he went in there, I think he landed two shots over the first round and a half of the fight. Tyron took him down. I thought his ground game was very, very poor. A lot to work on for Darren, but listen, Darren's only 25 years of age. You know, he's the world at his feet still, and I wouldn't even be surprised if we saw him move to 185 pounds as well. Obviously the cut's been an issue for Darren in the past, getting to 170 pounds. And, you know, in fairness to Darren, he did weigh in at 169 on Friday, but still I'd like to see him, you know, go up, not starve his body, not have to diet so much, and fight at a better sort of weight class that suits his body. And I think we'd see even a more powerful, better fighter in Darren Till at 185 pounds.
Yeah, as you said, he's still a baby in the combat sports world, like such a young fighter still. But surely the overwhelming emotion from him must be, I just didn't give that my best shot. Like, if he had it over again, he might have just been a little bit more aggressive.
I think so, but I think maybe Darren didn't realise how good Tyron Woodley's fight IQ is.
A lot of people don't.
You know, Tyron is probably the best guy in martial arts at the moment in the UFC in terms of, you know, what he can do, he can adapt his game plan. I'd say the number one guy in terms of being able to change up a game plan and being able to work the fight towards his strengths and understanding what's actually happening in the octagon and being able to neutralise fighters if they're throwing, you know, offence in his direction. And we saw that, you know, when Darren got in close, you know, picked him up, took him to the ground, got in and under, and it was, you know, it was a flawless performance from Tyron Woodley. Definitely going, I think, to be one of the best welterweights of all time. Not there yet. I think you've obviously GSP and guys at Matt Hughes, but I think in a couple more fights, people will really start talking about Tyron Woodley. He's a fantastic athlete and a fighter.
It's funny you bring up GSP. He obviously had a bit of a contentious relationship with Dana, and it seems Tyron's kind of picked up that mantle a little bit. Like in the pre-fight publicity, Dana kept saying, I've thrown this guy bones and he's not entertaining. And like, for my money, that was one of the most entertaining performances I've seen this year. Like he took Darren Till out on the feet and then he took him out on the ground.
Yeah, you know, he's, as we said a moment ago, he's a guy who's horses for courses. You know, it doesn't matter for Tyron Woodley about how he fights, but at certain times in fights, and we saw that obviously against Darren Till, you know, he's going to use his strengths to his advantage. And sometimes it's not aesthetically pleasing on the eye, like maybe the second Wonderboy fight, but he got in there, got the job done. And I think he's a fiery personality as well. He does a little bit of stuff for TMZ in the United States, which I don't think, you know, a lot of the fans, as Dana said, don't get behind him an awful lot. He's a controversial character. But listen, you know, the eyes are on him, and I think people are really beginning to respect his abilities as a champion.
Yeah, and like it's... We were speaking earlier about the health of boxing and how it's kind of had a little bit of a resurgence. UFC obviously went through some choppy waters after the sale, but they seem to have gotten a little bit more star power now, and even across the board in MMA outside the UFC, seems to be as strong a position as it's ever been.
Yeah, I think so to a certain extent. You know, a thing for me, and I've often mentioned over the years, is I'd like to see the UFC maybe put a little bit more promotional stock in behind certain fighters. You know, obviously we've seen the likes of Conor McGregor, they're giving Habib a little bit of a push now. He's obviously a big, big character known in Russia. But, you know, this fight against Conor could be that mantle where he's going to, you know, smash into the mainstream in the US. And he's very much a guy I think people are really getting behind. But still, though, for me, I think there's too much repetition in what guys we're seeing that are pushed into the spotlight. I'd love to see the UFC, you know, TJ Dillashaw, guys like that, Demetrius Johnson, just maybe give them a little bit more of a platform to express themselves, you know, show what kind of characters they are, and really get people to gravitate towards them. That's what I like to see. But yeah, no, listen, the sport's in a really healthy place at the moment for me, definitely. And Conor coming back as well, exactly. It's going to put more eyes on it, you know.
And Conor included, like, broad strokes, just give us an idea of what's coming up from now to the end of the year.
Yeah, listen, we're flooded with stuff we can do. We're going to have a lot of fighters, a lot of reaction from, you know, the world of mixed martial arts, obviously most notably the UFC. A lot of stuff lined up in the lead up to obviously 229, which is the biggest fight card of the year. Then, you know, we go down the line December, we've Nunes, Cyborg, Super Fight, we've, you know, lots coming up. So big focus on that, a big focus on, you know, what the fans think as well. That's something I really want to get across in the show. And also, you know, from a journalist point of view, other guys that are on the ground in these countries will be hearing from them as well. So plenty to look forward to. I'm totally excited about it. Can't wait to sort of share the world of MMA, and obviously a lot of domestic guys as well. We're going to have a few guys in the studio as well. So listen, so much stuff in 2 weeks' time, I think we're dropping the first one.
Exactly.
I've a lot of organising too, but listen, I'm looking forward to it, mate. Good job today as well. Enjoy
cheers,
the show.
Man. Good stuff. And get your thoughts into hashtag off the brawl. We're kicking off that hashtag.
You today, love that name as well, Ron, don't you?
You know, it's contentious, but... I just want to say thanks to Niall McGrath for coming in here, Andy Lee earlier on, Phil Egan and Raf Giallo of Team 33 fame for putting the show together. We'll be back next week with reaction to Canelo versus Golovkin and with more preview of Joshua versus Povetkin. Cheers.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.